My buying. Yeah, the guy I would go with him. Got a request last week to talk about. We've been discussing the situation in general, and the request that came in last week was to talk about the general sense of anti-Semitism that seems to be increasing in the world, and how does that work with the knowledge that we are the chosen people? So, was going to ask if the question could be articulated a bit better, meaning where is the conflict? But okay, I won't ask. I won't put us through that exercise. But that's really the beginning of the answer. A, there's no conflict. Not only no conflict, but B, one is a symptom of the other. And here we'll take a step back. You know, I'm going to start. I want to go a bit deep with your permission, but I want to start on a bit of a lighter note. I want to tell a story. This is a great story of wit. We have usually when we tell stories of our great leaders, we want to learn a personal lesson out of them. But this is a story of wit, but it actually holds a chush of a introduction to our subject now. In Tsarist Russia, they weren't very fond of yeshivas. The truth is, it didn't improve that much in communist Russia either, in fact. Okay, but it was already like that in Tsarist Russia. And they had very strict quotas, all in the name of, you know, bureaucracy and this and that. But they had very strict quotas. I don't know if it was 30 guys in a yeshiva or whatever it was. In Valazhin, they were like 300 people learning. How do you navigate that? Well, in Tsarist Russia, the answer was very simple. Bribery, that was standard part of bureaucracy. It was official, over the books, you filled out your official form. This is illegal. Did you pay a bribe? Yes. Not, it didn't work that way. But that was basically the way things operated. So everybody was fine with that. They knew that the local police chief had to be kept, you know, there's the over the table payments and the under the table payments, and everything was fine. Okay. Then there was a change in the local police chief. There was a new local police chief. And he notified that he's going to be coming for an inspection in the yeshiva. Now, they didn't yet have a relationship with him. So this guy had to be bribed for the first time. The problem was, and this was the report that they told Reb Chaim Brisker, who was the of the Rosh Yeshivas there, they told him that there's a chair over here. They told him that this guy, A, he's known to be a rabid anti-Semite, and B, he does not accept bribes. Might be an oxymoron, but this is an official in Tsarist Russia who doesn't accept bribes. They don't really. So Reb Chaim Brisker said, okay, fine. What do you mean, fine? What are we going to do? There's going to be an inspection here. We have 300 guys in the Mismedrash, and quota is 30. We'll bribe him. I said, we just explained that he doesn't accept bribes. Okay, let me rephrase that. He said, I'll bribe him. Okay. What happened? What happened? Reb Chaim Brisker decided he made an appointment. He wants to meet the new police chief. Made an appointment with him. Went in. This was the middle of the summer. He went in. You know, he wants to pay a visit. New police chief. He's the head of the local yeshiva. They should have a very good, friendly working relationship. Went in to meet him. And Reb Chaim Brisker showed up all wrapped up with a coat and a scarf and a big fur hat. All wrapped up as though it's the dead of the winter. It was hot outside. And this is how he shows up on this hot summer day. So he comes in, and the police chief is like looking at him. The police chief is, you know, with his shirt sleeves and whatever it is. He's looking at him, he said, "Why are you dressed that way?" Reb Chaim Brisker says, "Because it's going to storm tonight." He says, "What do you mean?" "My grandmother came to me in a dream last night and told me that there's going to be a snowstorm at some point between this afternoon and tonight. I don't want to be caught in the snowstorm." Talking mid-August, he looks at him, he's like, "You're nuts." He says, "You don't know my grandmother." Okay. And the police chief is like looking at her, and Reb Chaim Brisker says, "Look, I see you're not taking me seriously. I see you're not taking me seriously. Why don't we make a bet? 500 rubles. I know my grandmother says something in a dream, it happens. 500 rubles. By tonight, there's going to be a snowstorm." Police chief says, "I'll take the bet." Okay, by the way, 500 rubles was the regular amount of the bribe. Okay, but we don't know that yet. Police chief says, "Okay, no problem. We'll meet again tomorrow." And Reb Chaim went, left all wrapped up. They had their meeting, whatever it is. They got to know each other. He went all wrapped up with his fur hat and his scarf. And guess what happened later that night? It didn't snow. That's because this is a Litvish story. It's not a Siddur, okay? But Reb Chaim Brisker shows up the next day at the police chief, kind of comes in with his head bowed. He says, look, this is the first time my grandmother failed, but here, your 500 rubles. You earned it. Straightforward. Here, friends, it's fine. I don't grudge you them. I'm a good loser." The next week, the inspection was the inspection. The guy shows up at the yeshiva, all ready for business. Reb Chaim greets, "Oh, it's you. Ah, he's already his good friend, right?" He looks around. "See much more than 30 people here," and that was it. Okay. Reb Chaim bribed him. If you want, you can find a source for this story in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, right before Yaakov meets Esav. Of course, Esav doesn't need anything, he doesn't take bribes, but he sends and he sends and he sends, and Esav just sees more animals and more animals and more animals. By the time he meets Yaakov, they're best friends. Why am I telling this story? I'm telling this story just as an example of the wit and the humor with which Reb Chaim Brisker related to anti-Semitism. Now, don't get me wrong, okay? Anti-Semitism has caused us a lot of very great pain, death over the years. But right now I'm talking about the attitude toward the phenomenon in a general way, meaning. Today, it's almost like we can't get past the indignant horror as still again, right? The seasoned Jew is like, all right now there isn't any anti-Semitism. So the question is, where's it going to come from next, right? But that is a reality. And the seasoned Jew, of course, what do we focus on? Yishtadlus. We definitely have to take measures to do what we can do against it. We certainly are not interested in inviting Chalila. Okay? And we have to be very seriously, but in terms of the emotional, call it the shock, the horrified offense at the fact that, what, still in today's day and age, it's unbelievable. It's believable. We know it's always been, it will continue to be. And Emet Hashem now, we start on a light note. I want to go to the depth of it. Question.
I remember hearing somebody, say sometime that it's like built into the fabric of the world. Like you just said, it always was, it always will be, it'll be tomorrow. And so why do you think Hashem built anti-Semitism into the fabric?
Yeah. Unfortunately, that love might have been me. Because that's actually where we're headed. That's actually where we're headed. And here I want to, yes, try to approach the depth of it. Bear with me. I'll bring it out this way. Mamish, to your point. Indeed, it's in the fabric of the world. And we'll explain what the meaning of that is. But I'll just give you an example. This is the way I kind of bring it out for myself, is that one of the first displays of anti-Semitism was One of the first displays of anti-Semitism was the Grub basically makes this point. He doesn't put it that way. He just says, Sarah was not able to conceive. You know what that was? That was the koyach of anti-Semitism in the Bria. The Bria was working against an Am Hashem. And it's the same koyach that sometimes drives this nation and sometimes drives that nation and sometimes a different nation. Like the way I heard one of the Klosher Rabbanim put it, it says that anybody who thinks that the Arabs are our worst enemies we ever had, as the way he put it was, he has historic Alzheimer's. Meaning we've had plenty of experience with the European nations. Anybody familiar with that? Right? And it wasn't just the Germans either. We know about the Eastern Europeans, and we know about the Western Europeans, and we know about the French, and we know about the English, and we know about, we have experience basically with everybody. And yeah, it's basically kind of like this rotation. This century will be our turn. Next century is your turn. This decade, that decade, right? What's the Amkus behind it? Let's appreciate the Amkus behind it, and then we'll actually appreciate it. We'll actually appreciate it. Question.
I've been hearing a lot from different shows, I think, plus what I heard years ago. I would say the Arabs are the most historical. I wouldn't say it's Alzheimer's because it's going back to Hagar and Sarah.
Discuss it with historians. I'm not.
I think I heard from Rome and Sarah. That was the whole thing.
Okay, maybe I don't
I heard that
know.
one say, yeah.
I'm not
I
going to
also heard
grade
the
who.
impression heard the
All I'll
talk
say is that they all,
about the
okay,
Sarah thing, you know.
they all make the grade. It doesn't concern me too much who is at the top of the list.
We all know this, but how do we explain it to them?
How do we explain it to them? You're not going to come out of this year with an answer to that question. I hope what I am aiming for is how do we explain it to ourselves? That's really what I want to do now. Here's how the Maharal is the one that I've found who Mamish lays down the whole picture. He does it in very esoteric terms, but puts together a very, very profound picture that before and afterwards I've seen different pieces of it at different sfarim, but the Maharal Mamish lays this down as a whole comprehensive picture. What is the essence of the Jewish nation? What is the essence of the Jew? What is the essence of Am HaNivcha? Am HaNivcha does not mean that there were a whole bunch of nations. There was earth, a whole bunch of nations on earth. And Hashem came and said, okay, let's see who's the most appropriate. That's not what happened. Am HaNivcha means something much deeper and something much more intrinsic. And here's how we'll put it. There's a very fundamental difference. We say in Aleinu, Shalaya Hashem did not make us like the families of the earth. What is the meaning of the words the families of the earth? It means if you take a human being, what is a human being essentially? A human being essentially is a child of the earth, right? Came up from the earth, stood erect for a short amount of time, let's call it 100 years, and then slides back down. That's families of the earth, very close kin of the earth. Very close kin of the earth. That's not how it works with us. With us, it's a whole different story. What you see as the body that does end up back in the earth, and even that is what to talk about. But when you're looking at a Jew, the body is not the person. The body, if we'll use the Chovis Halvavus's paraphrase, Chovis Halvavus, is the office that the person is working in. For let's call it 150 years. The office that the person is working in. You want to use the Nefesh HaChaim's terms? It's the person's shoe. That's how the Nefesh HaChaim puts it. You are a neshama, which essentially means that you are something coming from above that's anchored in a body because there's a small period of time that the neshama has a certain job to do in this world. For that purpose, Hashem says, here's a body to use. Now, there's actually more to our body, and our body is a more essential part of that picture, but we're going to set that aside right now. In the big picture, that's the way it works. And therefore, you see two people with a body. One, The body is it. What you see is what you get. Begins and ends with that. With the other, you're not actually seeing the real person at all. We should really say it in these terms. When you look in the mirror, don't be misled to think that you're seeing the real person. It's something so much greater. And this is just the bottom shell office that you're working in right now. And therefore, I'll bring this out in the following way. Here's how Hirsch brings it out. Man is called Adam. Why are we called Adam? What is the word Adam connote? So, Adama. Adama, earth. So if Hirsch asks, so why is man called Adam? What about horses and cats and cows and flies and they're not earth? So Hirsch says something amazing, and this is our point. He says, here, we're all Anglos in this room, right? Pretty much. Where are you more likely to, I'm American, so I'll use that term, please. Okay. But where are you more likely to be identified as an American? In America or in Israel? In Israel, right? So Rav Hirsch says, on the contrary, none of the rest of life are called Adam because, of course, they're in Adama realm. The Chiddush is, man is that unusual heavenly being that actually has Adama to it. Really, we are Shaykh to that world. That's our main place. That's our main existence. That's our main essence. Just what? We are unusual in that world because none of the other heavenly beings, none of the other malachim, have any element of Adama to them. So we're the interesting one that actually has some earth to it. And that's why we're called Adam. Adam is actually bringing out our otherworldly nature. Everybody with me on this?
Yeah.
So now, in other words, what we are, we're not really a part of this world. There's a physical world. We are being radiated from above down into this world with a body to carry us. And that's what we mean, last summer, Adama. We are not kin of the earth. We're not related to the earth. We have a body that we use for some time. We send it back down to the earth. Afterwards, we bring it back up. But in terms of who we are, we're the neshama. What is that neshama? And what is it doing on earth? The neshama is given a job that none of the other malachim were tasked with, because the neshama is actually the greatest being. The neshama of the Jew is actually the greatest being that there is, greater than all the other malachim, and therefore it's specifically the neshama that was tasked with this job of actually being thrust into the physical world. But the physical world, it might feel like home, but it's actually foreign. It's a foreign existence in terms of who we really are and what the neshama is. Question.
Father of all people, not just the Jewish people. So, does that analogy, I mean, does that whole little story work for every person on the planet or only for the Jewish people?
For our purposes right now, and I'm not going to get into it, but for our purposes right now, yes. Meaning within Adam, there are different layers. And Yisrael, it's like the Gemara says, Adam Koyim Adam. The epitome of Adam is Yisrael. Now, there's a lot more to be said about that, but maybe if we get a request. Okay. So now, what is the essence of that neshama? The essence of that neshama, if we'll put it into simple terms, it's Hashem's ambassador into this world. Meaning there's a whole physical world. Physicality is something that's very, Hashem is not physical at all, but Hashem wants a certain representation in this world. And for that, he sends the Jew. He sends the Jewish neshama into this world, being kiviyachol radiated from above into this world to act as a representative of Hashem kiviyachol in this world. We carry the elokus of this in this world. And therefore, all kinds of different angles. Hashem Echad, right? Hashem is one. How many tribes of Klal Yisrael are there? 13. Not 12, right? 13?
13.
Yes, because you count Ephraim and Manasseh.
Ah.
Okay. So there
And
are
then you just me
13.
have lazy. You count the Ephraim and
No,
Manasseh, they
Ephraim and
take
Manasseh
away.
replace Yosef. Yosef splits into two.
That's to take away lazy.
No. We're adding one because Yosef is one, right? Yosef is one. So we're breaking Yosef into two. We don't have to take anybody else off. You with me on that? We're breaking Yosef into two. That brings us, yeah, take one of the 12, break it into two. Now we have 13, right? Okay. 13. What's the gematria of Echad? 13. List I checked. Okay. Echad is 13. Bringing out that we are the representation of Echad in this world. This, by the way, I'm not going to get into this now, but just in parentheses, gives you a whole new appreciation of the concept of Achdus. We're meant to be reflecting that Echad. That's why the Shechina is Shoreh on Klal Yisrael, the more they're be'achdus. Because again, we're supposed to be bringing out the Echad. Whatever the case is, this is what Klal Yisrael is in this world. Now, so if so, let's appreciate that. We're talking about a physical world, and there's a radiation of Elokus, of divinity into this world, which takes the form of me and you. This is what we're carrying. This is our function. This is our essence in this world. Now, so let's kind of tie that up for a moment and step over to the other side of things. The physical world actually has a built-in aversion to that. The physical world was built in a way that it is departing. It's kind of resisting. In order for it to be physical, it has to resist Elokus. Because Hashem is completely non-physical. If Hashem were to just Malei Chalatz Kavod, there wouldn't be much room for physicality. Therefore, the physical world actually manifests a certain departure from that Hashem Echad. And I'll get, again, bear with me. I'm going to take off for a moment, get a little bit abstract. We'll get back down to Ilam Hazeh. We nether, not more than 3 minutes. But therefore, for example, the Maharal brings it out in this way. The Maharal says, we know that history is encapsulated with four Malchias. Right? Everybody familiar with that? We have Malchus, Bavel, Edom, Paras, and Yavan. Sorry. Bavel, Yavan, Paras, and Bavel, Paras, Yavan, and Edom. Okay? That's the order of the four. That basically is the structure of the entire history of the world, which corresponds to the entire structure of the history of the Jewish people, because we talk in terms of four Golias, which correspond to those four Malchias, right? Golos again, Bavel, Paras, Yavon, and Edom, which encapsulates our history as a people.
What happened? Where was the piece of history from? The piece of history from before the first Golos? I'm reading about two.
Right, we mean the first Golos as in. The part of history before that was when Mamish had the Shekhinah in its full glory. So we're not really counting from that. The Maharal does discuss, the Sfarim discuss, fitting Mitzrayim into the picture. But for our purposes, in terms of after we didn't have that full open Shekhinah as in the Bais Rishon. So here's how the Maharal explains it. He says, Echad is a single point. It's just one, right? If you want to depart from that point, it goes in four directions. We're talking a very broad way. You can depart in four directions. And that's why the whole essence of Olam Hazeh is reflected in the number four. He says it's the struggle of four versus one. Four is departure from the one. One is the one. And therefore, we have Klal Yisrael, who's the Echad, okay, versus the rest of the world, which is reflected in the number four. But they're pulling away from the Echad. They're pulling away from the Echad. They may not understand it. They may understand it. Some of them did, some of them didn't. Anti-Semitism is something that doesn't require understanding. You can qualify for an anti-Semite even if you can't explain why.
That's
Right?
halacha.
Yeah, halacha, that's right. Any halachic, okay. But that's right. There are plenty who didn't understand why, but they just couldn't handle, and often it was for opposite reasons. If you look at the different reasons given, they're too successful, they're too pathetic, they're too, right? Bottom line is, you just can't handle them. And this is that koach in the Bria that we're referring to. This is that koach in the Bria that we're referring to, is that the way the world was built was, it's an essence of departure from Hashem Echad, and we are there to bring out that with all the departure, Hashem is still Echad. And if so, we understand the deeper workings of anti-Semitism. It's the resistance that's built into the Bria, working against that reality of Hashem Echad. And like we said before, That's why the seasoned Jew looks at it with a certain equanimity. Again, we don't, we're not inviting, we're not talking about, people don't come to me afterwards and said, you said anti-Semitism is a good thing, but people are hurt by Chas, right? We have to protect ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of understanding the depth of it and appreciating that, on the contrary, the very fact that all throughout history it was that same nation that was always the target of, yeah, there was always enmity and animosity between different nations, but it all kept coming back to, right? That was one thing that the enemies agreed on. Right? All kept coming back to this. That itself has to tell you that there's something deeper going on here. And that's why I come back to what I started with, and I say, it's not a conflict to the chosen people, it's a symptom of the chosen people. The fact that we're like in one place and the whole rest of the world just can't handle it. That is a symptom of we are not a part of that world. Why are we not a part of that world? Because we're a part of that much higher realm. This is how the Maharal lays down, and again, it comes together in different pieces from different Sfarim. But this is the idea of B'chol Dor V'Dor Engdom Aleinu, and I want to explain a little more the value of it. Right, in every generation, great, mighty, and successful nations have valiantly tried, and they never quite managed. Now let's understand something. Here, I want to take this discussion to the next step. Why is it set up like that way? Why is it set up that way? The answer, in a general way, is in order to bring out the greatness of Hashem and the Achdus of Hashem. Meaning as follows. And then we'll appreciate a little bit more some of our experiences during the Golos. If you want to bring out a light image, a white image, you make the background dark, right? See this in photography all the time. You want to you have a portrait of a family against flowers. The flowers are going to be blurry. The family is going to be sharp, right? The person is going to be sharp. Why not make the flowers beautiful also? No, when you want to bring something out, it's what we call yidyas hafachim achas. Opposites bring out. One brings out the other. When do we most appreciate food? Right? When you're fasting, it's these are obvious things, right? So yisroina, you appreciate the light dafka from within the dark, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is a yesod that explains all kinds of phenomena in hashkafa and Torah in the processes of our history. But here is the overall. That's also why we needed to go through Mitzrayim before we got Matan Torah, in order to gain, we wanted to get the full effect of connection to Hashem. That's how it ties into the Parsha Shavua, right? That's really the depth behind the Shibud Mitzrayim, but one of the aspects of the depth. We wanted to get the full effect of Klal Yisrael connecting with Hashem. It had to come dafka from being catapulted up from the lowest of places. Not that we would have stayed in Canaan and Hashem would have called a gathering at some point. That would have had a weaker effect in terms of attaching Klal Yisrael to Hashem. But now, the overall point of this concept is that Hashem brings out himself, kiviyachol, in a manner of, it looks like chas v'shalom. There's no, won't even say the words, right? But it looks like it's a void. It looks like it's not. It looks like the way the Gemara is termed, les din v'les dayan. You don't have that great judge. And Hashem says, right, let's build up that impression. Let's build up that impression. And here I'll show where I am. And this, he does this with us. And the Kuzari brings this out in a very powerful way. We are reflectors of Hashem. And this has two aspects to it. But again, let's the bottom line, the catch all is, we were sent into this world to be the representatives of Hashem, to be the reflectives of Hashem, to be the ones bringing out that no matter what anybody says, no matter what anybody does, Hashem Echad. No matter what things seem like, Hashem Echad. We do this in two ways. We usually stress one way, but now we're going to focus on the other way. We do this through our lifestyles, through our actions. That's one way of bringing out Hashem Echad. But we also do it passively. Hashem shows it off us. How does that work? How did Hashem show? After Bria Soil, after the world was created, when was the greatest demonstration of Hashem Echad? Mitzrayim, right? How did he do that? He reflected it off us. Throughout the days in the Bayis Rishon, in the great days of Klal Yisrael. when the golden era were at their peak, the rest of the world looked in awe at the supernatural reality and prosperity and power of Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, which was like just completely out of all the rules of the rest of the world, and that was bringing out Hashem Echad. And now the Kuzari says there's another side of the coin, and this is what we've been experiencing in the Golos, because Hashem brings it out. It's brought out through our prosperity and our prestige and greatness, and it's also brought out in the times of our lowliness and our oppression. How? Hashem is showing the same thing from the other side of the coin. Here's the nation that everybody in the world would just like to get rid of it. And at certain points in time, it looks like it's going to happen. Fast forward 100 years, they're thriving. Makes no sense. I think we've said a number of times the gopher mushroom, right? I'm going to repeat it. You know the name, not the gopher, whack-a-mole. You know the game whack-a-mole? Moles, moles, not gophers. It's like this arcade game where you hold a hammer, that's right, you hold a hammer and there's like six holes and you have these little moles popping out of them and you have to bang each one down, right? You have to bang each one down. You bang that one down, the other one pops up. I think that you have to do it within 3 seconds. You don't know where it's going to pop up. If you miss it 3 seconds, you're out. Bang that one down, it pops up over here. Bang it down there, you pop it up, pops up over here. This is the joke that we've been making out of our enemies all throughout history. Now it's very often a very sober, serious, and painful joke. Okay, I'm talking in very conceptual, humorous terms right now, but they managed to completely blot us out. That's it, done. Lo yizach Hashem Yisrael oid, right? Pei Gimel, which is one of the recommended prakim for these days. Yizach Hashem Yisrael oid. All of a sudden, in a different part of the world, they pop up. Stamp them out over there, they pop up over there. That's what we've been seeing throughout our history. Question.
Okay, but who are we proving it to? The nations of the world that all hate us still hate us. Like, who are we showing? Like, only ourselves. Is this a lesson only to ourselves? Because the rest of the world ain't getting it.
Oh, good question. Who exactly are we teaching this lesson to? Who exactly are we teaching this lesson to? You know, we didn't have the Romans at the end of the day take their hats off to us and say, okay, guys, right. But first, let's appreciate that point. Mighty nations against a defenseless nation for 2,000 years at the mercy of all the other nations. They have the mightiest nations of the world, the biggest names in history, did their best to blot us out, and somehow they are the subject of tours and ruins, and we're still here. So let's just appreciate that phenomenon. Now, who are we proving it to? And the answer is right now, no, we're not proving it to them. We are proving it to ourselves because the first one that Hashem wants to appreciate it is us. But in the ultimate picture, this is really part of Hashem's whole process. This is all a process leading to, and this was the Ramchal in the Sefer Das Tfunis. This is basically the whole theme of the Sefer. That all of the different ins and outs of this pattern are all leading up to the ultimate Gilui, to the ultimate revelation, will be when there will be that ultimate flash of light against all that darkness. And retroactively, it'll all come together into that picture that, yes, the entire world will look at it and say, whoa, that's what's been going on the whole time. Now we suddenly see it. And when that happens, that's when we're told, just like what happened in Mitzrayim, they'll suddenly turn to us or around to us in awe and say, that's who you are all along. And then we'll have that stage, which is described in La'asid Lavai, where it will be a privilege. They'll be vying for the privilege to have some sort of association with some Jew, which is what we managed to see in Mitzrayim. That's what was going on there right before the Jewish people left Mitzrayim. They were like just trying to pile on. They wanted to have the privilege of, I that Jew has my bracelet. Right? So that's where it's headed to. In terms of who is it proving it to, right now we're still in the period of it's the Choshech, but what we're seeing now is that even though it's so uncanny, that flickering flame is continuing to flicker and flare. Right? It flares up. Why? Because you can't exterminate a Lakus. You can't get rid of a Lakus. And even more than that, it's ironic because that's really what they draw their whole existence off. It's an ironic situation where their whole claim, their whole right to exist, is the fact that they are trying to get rid of us. As soon as we'd be gone, they'd lose their right to exist. Again, I'm putting it into conceptual terms. But
Today.
We'll call it the Koyach of anti-Semitism. I'll leave it a little vague. Let's say we're talking about, I want to go back in history so it doesn't really get too hard to deal with. But let's say go back to the Romans, okay? The Romans wanted to get rid of us, not understanding that that is exactly where they're drawing their life's fuel off. The fact that right now they are the ones who are playing this role in history. And it's our existence and their attempts to get rid of us is what gives them their whole meaning in history. It's an amazing thing if you, and that's why also when you talk about the Maltheists, I'll go back and illustrate this with one example. And with that we'll end. I know we've gotten a little abstract here, but I hope that we also touched down often enough to keep it focused. Amraphel, remember Amraphel? Parshas Lech Lecha, the four kings. Avram goes to war against four kings. One of their names is Amraphel. Rashi identifies who this Amraphel is. Amraphel is Nimrod. Amraphel is Nimrod. Why is he called Amraphel? The answer is Rashi says, Omar Poel. He's the one who told Avram, fall into the fiery furnace. He's the one who cast Avram into the fiery furnace. Now, I want to bring out this point. Nimrod was the first real monarch in the world. Okay? If you were to read his biography, first of all, I would imagine this is the man who invented monarchy. He was the first king. If you were to read this person's biography, I imagine that it would be a number of volumes. He built up a melucha. It evolved, right? All the different stages. Either he was a central part of the Migdal Bavel, or he was actually one of its opponents, whatever. We're not going to get into that now. But he threw many people into the fiery furnace. His fiery furnace was very well fed. Okay? It was one of those people was Avram. If you were just to take in the story of Nimrod's life, how much space does Avram Avinu occupy? Very little. Maybe it makes it onto one page in that multi-volume biography. Maybe it doesn't even. Maybe it's just part of a general chapter describing all the people he threw into a fiery furnace. But you know what the pasuk is bringing out? The pasuk is bringing out that, yeah, he had that whole life story, but the whole historic significance of it in the true picture is he was given all that melucha because Avraham Avinu needed to go through the challenge of facing off against the mighty monarch and being thrown into the fiery furnace. And therefore, this mighty monarch had to be given a whole world dominion and had to be given a whole big melucha. Why? Because he needs to play one stage in the life of Avraham Avinu. Here we move over to those Arba Malchias, right? They're also called Dalit Gullias because these great empires, the Roman Empire, the Greek Empire, and the Persian Empire, Edom, Persian Empire, the Greek, Babylonian Empire. Edom is what we consider today the spiritual descendants until now. But what are they? They're Gullias, meaning, again, you take the story of the Greek Empire, how much space did the Jewish people occupy? It's one of many nations that had that friction with them. But no, the essence of that whole Greek Empire was to be a Galus Yavan, because they were needed to be one stage in the challenge of the Jewish people in terms of this friction, in terms of them bringing out, yeah, look at that Greek Empire, but we're here once again because we, Elokus, sails above the mightiest forces of the physical world. Okay.
So the Rebbe is saying that once that light force is done, once that's been brought out, and the light has been brought out into the darkness, that's why they just fizzle into nothing because
Well,
they're.
we haven't really gotten to the stage where the light was brought out fully. That will be Lasid Lavai. But what we're saying now is in terms of why do they fizzle? The way Hashem set it up is that there are comes and goes. It's in waves. It will be brought out through all different angles and all different malchias. And therefore, once they did their job, they're done. Okay, we've addressed the subject. You've obviously seen that we've touched on a lot of other branches that this can go into. But that's something to hold on to in terms of appreciating what's actually happening when we see it around us. And to look at the anti-Semitism, not to say, so how does that work with being the chosen nation, but to say that's what brings out our greatness as the chosen nation. A good devoch.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.